And welcome to episode 19 of the Peak Craft podcast. I'm your host this week, Emilson. And joining me today, we actually have a representative of each spec. Actually, well, okay, I might be lying here, but I think everybody here actually plays their spec. Like, we've got Abelito.
Hey.
And you are a Mistweaver vet. Do you play Mistweaver right now?
Yeah, I actually do. It's a dying art, you could say.
Is it just because Way of the Crane exists now?
Not really. I'd been playing it in Battle for whatever it's called. But I don't know. I switched back from Resto Druid before the tier, and I've just been having a blast with it.
Awesome. Joining us as well is Windwalker Vet and admin of Peak Babylonia.
Hi.
And then one of our brewmaster buddies, Quoty.
It's me, your favorite.
You can keep thinking that.
I'm my favorite, at least.
It's a low bar.
Wow.
I mean, Cordy's pretty amazing. Until you come to actually playing the game.
Yoink.
So the topic today is not supposed to be let's all bash Quoty, but...
No, don't worry, I'm used to it.
It's okay, Quoty, we all love you.
You'll get your comeuppance one day.
Our actual topic for today is the new raid we've got, Eternal Palace. Heroic came out last week, so around July 9th, and Mythic came out this week in North America on the 16th, EU on the 17th. It's an 8-boss raid, so it's like a full raid, unlike Crucible of Storms. Set in Nashatar, focused on Queen Ajara, who's one of our last remaining villains from Warcraft 3 days.
Oh yes, she is.
Yeah.
She's old school.
The last.
Man, we're really burning through them.
School. I mean, people said we were really burning through them when we killed the Lich King. How long has it been since we killed the Lich King?
Like, almost 10 years.
A hot minute.
I believe there's the baby here. He doesn't remember how long it's been.
I didn't even play the game then, so.
So, how far is everybody in the tier so far? It's been out, you know, most of a week at this point. I raid the weekend, so I've only had one night on it so far, and we've gotten the first 3 bosses down. How about the rest of you? How far have you gotten?
My other group and the guild that you and I are both in. We got the first 3 down. I was in for the first 2 because God help me if I get put in for Behemoth. That fight looks unpleasant.
It's not.
I've done the first 3 on Mythic. I'm working on Ashvain this weekend. That pretty lady.
Yeah, and I raid on the weekend, so I haven't actually stepped foot into Mythic yet, but we're like, I think, going through the last 2 bosses of Heroic again this week first.
Wow, we have a lot of weekend raiders here.
Sprint's new Jack Swing. All the cool kids are doing it.
I guess.
Telling you, one day raiding, it's the next big thing.
Honestly, if there was a one day guild that flew through it,
that hit CE,
and I didn't have to leave Cali, I would do it.
Could you imagine one day raiding and hitting, you know, hitting Cutting Edge? That'd be bananas.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, the old one day, 12 hours a day goat.
Yeah, I mean, it'd have to be like a 4-hour raid at the least.
I mean, I could see like a 3-hour raid if everyone comes like super prepared and they did their research beforehand.
Yeah, well,
that is the eternal problem.
If Pegs could fly.
I mean, OE hits, you know, we do 7, and we hit CE with a couple weeks to spare, so it's not completely unreasonable.
7 hours, not 7 days.
Yeah, so 7 hours.
No listening.
Yeah.
Anyway, the raid.
Yeah, the raid. So let's start with kind of that first 3 bosses, because it sounds like at least 3 of us have gotten through those on Mythic so far. Sorry, Abe. Raid earlier in the week, I guess.
We'll get there as soon as you get there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no rush. We got a few months before Cutting Edge ends.
True enough. So the first boss is Abyssal Commander Sivara. This one, so I guess before we actually start talking about these, we're not going to go super in detail about the mechanics of these bosses. If you want a guide, Peak has some spec guides. Wowhead has some just in general, here's how you approach the fight kind of guides. There's a lot of resources on there. You don't need this podcast. Oh yeah, Icy Veins.
Yeah, sorry, Icy Veins, written by yours truly, has a guide to all the bosses for Brewmasters.
Yeah, Wowhead has spec-specific guides too. We have to write them.
Yeah, so all that put together, we're not going to go into all the details of the mechanics unless it's something that's like very closely related to what we're talking about. We're just going to kind of talk through what we think about the bosses and what surprised us and what we did and kind of didn't like. Some of them will have more of one of those than the other. So back to Sivara. Sivara surprised me. It's a much, much harder boss than we've had for a first boss in a while. Like, I definitely wiped once or
maybe
twice
ever.
On... maybe ever. I definitely wiped a couple times on Garothi Worldbreaker. But
yeah, but that was different. I kind of felt like Garothi was more of execution. Like, you could right mess that up if you weren't paying attention, whereas Sivara really kind of took time to figure out exactly what you were going to do. And we've kind of found that a lot of different guilds have drastically different ways of handling things. Kind of everybody just had to find the way that worked for them that one time. It'll be interesting how many people kind of stick with the same strategy next week, or, you know, how hard a second kill will be.
I know that we changed our approach to it partway through it. It took us, we killed it on our 9th pull, and it was the sketchiest kill. Although I've heard of multiple people killing it after the Enrage hits, which is what happened to us. She hits her Enrage, and then she casts spells nonstop for 30 seconds. But before she does that, she one-shots the tanks. So if you don't kill her in those 30 seconds, you're not killing her. But we killed her 26 seconds after she Enraged.
We hit her Enrage on one of the pulls. I think it happens because the half of your raid who hasn't quite gotten the fight dies. And, you know, the people that understand it are able to survive for quite a while, so long as their healer's up.
I think it's interesting, like, you got a great point, Babs. This boss doesn't really have an obvious, like, way to approach it in the way that if you look at the mechanics of, say, Garothi, to go back to that example. There's, on Garothi, you have to soak some things, you have to not stand in fire, and you have to get away from the boss at a specific point that's very well telegraphed. And that's like, there's not a lot of, okay, how do we approach this? It's very obvious how you approach that. Every mechanic literally has, in the dungeon journal, here's what you do, or you wipe. Sivara doesn't have that.
Sivara reminds me of, like, a Verimathris without, like, a healing debuff. Because it's a lot of tick damage that goes out the whole fight.
Yeah, it's seems pretty healing intensive, although I don't heal, so I can't speak too much to that.
Yeah, I mean, looking through logs, it looks brutal on healing.
Yeah, from what I've like talked to other people about, it's like 50k HPS and you're running 5 healers, so it's a whack ton of healing the whole fight. But if you don't really get behind and people don't mess up, it's manageable.
I know on our kill, And up to that point, you know, we were running into the problem with people needed to be a lot more aggressive with clearing their stacks. So I died because I only had one, only one of our warlocks came to help me soak my overwhelming debuff. And so I died and spent the entire rest of the fight just calling out and telling people when to clear stacks, because people, you know, we were like, all right, let's, you know, clear it 3 to 5. And then there are people who are kind of steadily hitting 7. You know, so that makes it both easier on the healers because it's less often, but then they're bigger damage explosions when they do.
And then they have to focus that one target
right.
harder than everyone else. So it's like, if you're a Mistweaver, it can feel bad to hit Essence Font because you're like, that person's going to die in 4 ticks and I want to get a full Essence Font off.
This is giving me actually some things that I need to go and look at in the logs for our kill before we go back in next week. Because we had a really messy kill. Like I said, we hit the Enrage, and we didn't hit the Enrage because the people in our raid group can't do damage. Like, they can put up numbers. We hit the Enrage because people died.
Right. Yeah, we, you know, after our kill, we joked that next week I'll get like 3 loyal to the end traits and then just die right at the beginning and spend the rest of the time buffing people with loyal to the end and making calls.
Oh my
because
gosh.
It just
are you
makes
have,
so much easier.
Are you
I actually
Rev
heard
go
that.
Yeah, I mean, you toss a Rhett in there, even better.
I've actually heard that it doesn't matter how many loyal to the end traits you have, it's how many they have. So you can have 1 and then die, and everyone that has 3 gets buffed for a 3 buff instead.
Yeah, it's based on the amount of traits that they're.
What I'm really hearing, though, what I'm really hearing is that Babs, for the briefest moment, embodied Ian Hazakosta's vision of tanking. He was the battlefield commander.
Well, that's actually going to be a thing on Ashvin. A lot of guilds are doing 3 tanks, and the third tank is just not doing much but soaking stuff. And he's destined to die, so they run low at the end and say, oh, everybody just run it, you're going to get some free stats.
I wish I had gotten any Azerite from the raid at this point.
I'm with you there.
I have gotten, Babs, you can be jealous, I've gotten no less than 4 Windwalker weapons since the raid opened.
Really?
I've gotten the heroic version of the behemoth weapon, and the mythic version of the behemoth weapon, and 2 different one-handers from Mythic Plus.
Why are you rolling as Windwalker?
Because they don't
get your own damn weapons.
I want to. I actually accidentally closed the bonus roll thing on Savara, so I didn't get the bonus roll for a weapon, and I was really sad.
I'm still sitting at 415. Dangle, the other Windwalker in our group, is at like 4. I think he's got a 440 and a 430 just from our heroic run last.
If it makes you feel any better, I spent the entirety of BOD using 2 400 weapons in my Windwalker set.
Yeah, historically, my gear improvements come in big bunches. I tend not to be incremental. So I'll go straight to 2 445 weapons rather than getting a 430 and then a 445.
That sounds right.
So the tank damage is really crazy on Savara, too. At least for Brewmaster. I guess maybe Paladin's okay with it, since it's so much magic damage.
It is a lot of magic damage.
If you look at people's logs, people running the rank 3 Nullification Dynamo, that is the top damaging ability. The minor passive that deals damage.
I missed a few days of dailies in Mechagon, and I really regret that, because I could have had the rank 3 version of it this week, but now I won't have it until next week, unless I, like, spend all
powerful.
Day tomorrow doing Mechagon shit, and even then, maybe won't get it.
Yeah, I'm at the point of just needing, I think I need 5 more spare crate boxes, and then I can buy the purification protocol.
See, I'm not exalted yet.
I'm real happy as a healer. I just don't care what's on Mechagon. It's all the, you know, everything in there is kind of meh for me.
I mean, it's kind of an odd fight. I remember sitting and listening to Method, you know, as they kind of geared up, you know, when they started their stream and listening to Sko talk, you know, and kind of going through the boss they thought was going to give them a headache. And one of the casters, I can't remember which one it was, you know, mentioned that, you know, Zavar is going to be a little bit more difficult than people expect and stuff like that. And he kind of brushed it off. And I mean, they may have one shot it. I don't really remember. I missed that, the start of their stream, but it definitely, you know, I think pretty much everybody is finding that it's more difficult, I think, than they expected. And most first, I think we've only, you know, at least when we got there, you know, on Tuesday, you know, a lot of looking at all of the early logs that we had from people that were day raiding and stuff, we only found like one kill that was clean. Everybody else was limping to the end with half your DPS dead or with a tank gone or healers dropping. Like, it seemed kind of everybody, even though, you know, I think it was a little obvious that it was going to be more difficult, people kind of just wrote it off as, you know, oh, no, there's no way it's going to be that tough.
That actually really kind of annoyed me. I don't want to talk about like internal raid team things, but we definitely had people that didn't come into Zavara and knowing the mechanics and kind of just like prepped for some of the later fights, expecting Zavara to be something like Talak or Champions or even like Jadefire, where it just kind of fell over if you knew the vague mechanics and also could pump numbers, and it just doesn't.
Well, I think like going into, if we didn't have Champions, you know, almost if we like even Talak was not difficult, but it was more difficult than Champions. You know, I think everyone will agree with that. So mm-hmm. I think if we had gone from Talak to Zavara, it wouldn't have felt as big of a jump. But going from Champions to Zavara and having those be more directly compared, it's really a drastic difference in difficulty.
Yeah, like the only way you can wipe on Champions is if you miss the interrupt and the boss full heals. And even then, you can probably still kill the boss. It's just going to take twice as long.
No, trust me, you can't. We two-shot the boss. Our first kill was her at 5%, and she healed.
That's a like, rough one.
We called a wipe beautiful. When it happened, but I don't see any reason that you couldn't just have the tank swap and reset their debuffs and just do it again. Oh, wait, she gets the permanent stacks, doesn't she? She gets permanent stacks, that's why.
And, like, if you blew Lust to try and beat a timer, you know, stuff like that, then you might have to kind of tweak things.
Okay.
But
yeah,
so it is theoretically doable, but probably better just to wipe and start over.
Yeah.
You're going to spend more than the time you've already spent trying to get to the end anyway, so you might as well start over.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a less likely chance to get there, so you're just playing bad numbers.
One of the things that actually kind of annoyed me about Zavara is the tank buster on this fight. It's not supposed to be a tank buster. It's designed to be split with other players, so you're supposed to, like...
Yeah!
Intended...
Crushing reverberation, yeah.
Yeah, you're intended to stack on people and split the damage between them. But it only does, like, 500k physical damage. So it's totally safe for a tank to take by themselves. Brewmaster is super safe. Even a Blood DK that has like the worst upfront mitigation of any tank is super straightforward for them to just rotate cooldowns. They only need something like once a minute, maybe twice a minute at the most, to take it, just death strike it back. The annoying bit is that if a melee strays too close to you, they get one shot.
See, and I would say that the annoying bit is if a tank turns the boss slightly closer to me, then you get one shot. There's a different perspective,
you know, a
different
a
wording.
The issue is that if the tank and a single melee get too close, the melee's dead.
Oh yeah, toast.
They are super dead. And that's really frustrating. I wish they would just make Crushing Reverberation just a normal tank buster, because that's how people are playing it. It doesn't, or make it do enough damage that you need to split it. Like, one or the other, but not this halfway in between where it just kind of pops up out of nowhere and kills somebody.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a gray area between, you know, just being enough that you gotta two soak it, or just being not enough that it's really obviously aimed to be one.
See, I want to say they changed it from PTR, because I went in and did like the first week heroic PTR, which was terrible, but that it knocked you back a good bit, and it felt like it hurt a lot more, because I'm pretty sure our tanks were yelling during that.
I wonder if they saw the other mechanics they had in here and just decided, you know what, we're going to cut the damage on that because the other damage is so high still.
Yeah, because I was playing a balance druid for it, and I would get the frost axe, and I just didn't have to move the whole fight, because whenever crushing reverberation would happen often enough where it would knock you and you drop all your stacks just moving back.
Oh, wow.
So it was actually just two mechanics that got nullified by it.
Yeah, crushing reverb doesn't knock back now. And
yeah, that was a change we were surprised to see.
Is that a hot fix?
It does. It knocks. Yeah, no. It doesn't. The only knockback that comes in the fight is if you are inside the boss's hitbox when she casts the barrage.
No, I'm sure the crushing reverberation knocks back.
Actually, it might. I would have to go look at a VOD.
If I'm not mistaken, it's very small, and it's only for people in melee.
Okay.
Is from what I remember seeing.
It might actually knock back. I don't remember. If it did, it wasn't a huge amount. It wasn't enough to roll back in. Because I know I wasn't rolling back in.
No, it's just a walk back in. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a baby knockback.
So what we ended up doing for ours is we had the tanks positioned on like the front and back of the boss and the melee on the sides, and then we would flip the boss around to make the, like, we had the frost side of the room and the poison side of the room, and we would flip the boss around so that the frost side of the barrage would always be pointed at the frost side of the room, because it alternates. Every other barrage has frost pointed at the same side.
Does it? Wow.
Listen, I mean, frost is always on the boss's left and poison's always on the boss's right, I think. So it's based on where she's facing?
So it goes frost left, then it goes frost right, then it goes frost left, then frost right. So if you see it as always frost on the left, for example, then that's your tanks flipping it back and forth.
Gotcha.
So, but as a result of that, that was kind of what led to us being in some awkward situations where a DPS would come back from soaking one of the pools and just step too close as a reverberation went out and just, like, die. So, what do you all think of this boss overall?
As a healer, I actually really like it. Because it's not, you know, a pushover, we're going to three heal this and, you know, take a nap. But it's not like we're hitting this super tight window of we have to, like, maybe six heal it, like, on these world first kills. It feels good as a healer. But let me preference that with, I'm someone who loves seeing big numbers, so if I get a chance to have a boss that I can blast on, I'm loving it.
Our holy paladin hit 80k HPS for part of the fight, and that's a lot of healing.
Yeah, I think when early attempts on Ashvane by Limit, they had their holy paladin hitting that amount too, but like, Ashvane is such a tougher boss.
What about you, Babs and Quody?
I think overall, kind of once you get through that initial shock of the difficulty, you know, as a first boss, I think it's fine. I'm not someone that does a lot of pugs or has a lot of ults that I want to gear up, so I don't really mind, you know, if it takes pugs a little bit longer to do that. It's not something that affects me that often. But I think it was kind of a good, you know, introduction to to the raid. I don't mind it being a little bit more difficult than, say, champions.
I actually really appreciate not having another champions, because champions was a really boring fight.
I can't say I'm that into it. I really didn't like the overwhelming barrage knockback. Sometimes I was standing in it and it didn't knock me back, and it's hard to avoid when you're in melee. It's I didn't really enjoy the boss much. And I'm also a fool. I think I got frozen twice on our kill just because I forget to move.
I got frozen once. Do it. Not on a kill, but one of our pulls, I got frozen right before reverberation and felt like an idiot.
Well, I found that mechanic super funny, because I didn't even through our first two heroic kills, the week before killing it through normal and heroic, I had no idea that mechanic. And I was like, why am I stunned? What the heck did I get hit by? You know, why am I stunned? And I didn't figure that out until we went through, we have our round table that we kind of go through the strategy for the first couple bosses. And we had that. And I was like, oh, that makes so much more sense. But I found that, like, I've always been one that struggled to kind of stand still. So I had no problem if I had to keep moving. But I was shocked that when I had to think about it, it felt so much more difficult than kind of my normal jittery movement that I would be while DPSing anyway.
Probably the most annoying thing about the boss is that when you're tanking it, if she casts too many things in a row,
she can accidentally drop the debuff
at like three. And it's kind of easy not to notice if you're being lazy and just always swapping the same amount of stuff. And then you end up with pools and melee, and it's...
Yeah, pools and melee are a big no-no. They super fuck up your positioning.
Yeah, I know on our heroic kill, like, I know it's only heroic, but, like, we had two pulls drop in melee, and the whole strat for that was just, screw it, we're going to the other side of the room. This is too much work.
That's basically what we concluded on one day we had that happen. What we ended up doing is swapping not on reverberation or on stack number, but swapping when she casts barrage. When she casts barrage, she's fixed in her location and facing, so she won't change it until she's done casting. So when she starts casting, the other tank can just taunt it and continue to do their thing and establish threat, while their counterpart can go and drop their stacks in the corner, and coincidentally, because they're in the corner, has a real easy time dodging the spears. But that also, I think, kind of increased our tank healing requirement by a fair bit, because we had to go to like 12, 13 stacks.
Oh my lord.
What? That's insane.
So I'm going to be going over logs this week to figure out exactly where we can swap and not have that high number of stacks, and also not have to deal with stacks randomly resetting.
So there are other bosses in this raid too.
There are other bosses in this raid, and we should probably move on to them. Although I feel like the next couple are probably going to have a little bit less for us to talk about. So let's talk about Radiance Vajara.
I personally really liked this fight. I thought it was simple, and yet, you know, kind of one of the simplest mechanics of just kind of going around in a circle. When you split the raid up and you have to kind of watch that they're on the other side of you, so you guys don't get trapped in, you want to get trapped in opposite sides when the walls show up, you know, and I think kind of everybody goes through that first. Like, I think watching you guys stream last night, you went through that and then killed it like a pull or two later. And we kind of did the same thing. Like, everyone kind of has to go through that first time of realizing that, oh, it is important that you're, you know, exactly on the other side of the other group, and you can't just kind of move all, you know, willy-nilly. And I kind of like that. It was something that seemed like it should have been super easy, but in reality it required just a little bit more thought than I think is initially, you know, you expect. So I liked it. It's got a nice mix of single target. It's got nice steady damage, but predictable damage. You know, there's not a lot of panic moments. So I kind of overall really, really liked that, the fight.
Oh, I'm with you there. It just stresses me out, like, going into it, because a lot of people run around like chickens with their head cut off. And as a healer, I'm like, oh, you're out of my range, and if I go to you, I can't heal the tanks. Oh, and now I have to dispel. But with a little more organization, it's going to be a great fight from
nobody, the healer's point of view. This is a fight that I don't think you should have any issues with range. The way we did it, at least, and I assume you're probably going to do something similar, is there's two stack points, there's two groups on opposite sides of the boss, and like they do have to keep opposite each other. But because they're opposite each other, you basically have everybody kind of in a loose spread on two people that are marked on each side of the boss. So everybody's in range of Essence Font and Dispels and all this stuff. And if they're not, they're not stacked for where the tornadoes go and all that stuff.
The problem that we found with having groups too far apart is that sometimes you can get three Dispels on one side.
We had that happen.
Which is solvable with warlocks, I guess.
Yeah.
Dispel. Our warlocks are amazing at that. They love dispelling things. Weirdos.
Yeah, I think that was something that you can kind of, you know, a couple times we noticed that, you know, one of the things that kind of threw off where the groups were in terms of rotating around was that you'd go and one side would get all the tornadoes. So you wouldn't notice that you had to move. Or like that you wouldn't really notice the other side had to move because you didn't have to move, you know, so you kind of had, we kind of had to have people paying just a little bit of attention. I think on our kill, our guild leader who was out of, you know, of the fight, he was sitting that one out, was like watching one of our streams and was letting us know, even though it was a little bit of a delay, because, kind of gave you time to adjust, but it kind of, he kind of reminded us to make sure that we were on opposite sides of the boss. So I like that.
It also is great because if you played in Legion, you basically know over half the boss fight.
Yeah.
It's just so much easier when it's like that. And then new mechanics are not even that bad to add on. And it kind of feels like they should have had that in Legion.
I really appreciate that they did fix what I think is the biggest problem that Eye of Azshara had, which is how easy it was to get knocked into the boss water in Eye of Azshara.
Yeah.
To like accidentally step into it and then you're stuck kind of thing. It's really hard to accidentally end up in the boss water on Radiant. You have to like walk into a tornado at just the right angle to end up there.
Yeah, and they also removed the worst mechanic, you know, to a healer and everyone else, was the one that just did a percentage of your health splitting amongst the group that scaled with Mythic Plus level.
Yeah.
I remember, and it was all physical damage, so for, you know, a Mistweaver, I couldn't take Diffuse Magic and just ignore it. I would have to sit there and plan out, like, okay, I'm going to use, if it gets on me, I'm just going to have to use 3 cooldowns on myself, and then if it gets on me again, we're going to use a battle res.
I will say, I do have some complaints about this fight, though, as a tank. Because there's...
Ooh, me too.
How about you go first, Cody? I want to hear what you say.
Well, I think it exposes a little problem with the camera in WoW. And especially since they reduced how far you can zoom out. There's a nasty knockback, which you always have to take as a tank. And the room is actually covered in traps and tornadoes. And it's kind of hard to see because it's not like you can turn your camera around and look through the boss because he's a big lad. So I've definitely been knocked into traps and tornadoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely something that I noticed, that it becomes very easy for, like, our first couple attempts on Heroic where we didn't know, you know, can you manage the tornadoes just avoiding them, or should you, you know, do we really need to rotate, stuff like that. One of the first things I noticed on the fight was how quickly you can lose track of what's going on at your feet you know, are kind of things going around you, because there's kind of a lot of moving, a lot of flashing and bright colors to kind of distract you. And then, you know, you get to the interfaces and everything is kind of grayed out. So, you know, it becomes, you know, kind of your eyes almost have to adjust to the different, you know, kind of color of what you need to be looking at. So, yeah, I definitely, now that you pointed out, that's definitely something that I noticed as well.
I definitely a couple times got knocked back and just got knocked over one of the traps that's exploding and stunned for 6 seconds. And it's just like, oh, okay, I guess I sit here now. Or got knocked back and it knocked me back far enough that I just landed in the water and had to swim back. And thankfully, the outer water doesn't do any damage to you, but it's still annoying. Mm.
And you might say to us as monks, well, why don't you have your transcendence portal down, right? That's because every time that tornado will go right on top of your portal. Trust me.
I also had that happen.
And we're also rotating.
Yeah.
So it's, you're committing, what, like one in every 10 GCDs to placing a portal down? No, thank you.
Well, and I personally just never remember that that ability exists unless I absolutely need it. And typically that requires getting knocked off and because I just forgot that that exists at all.
What like I did is I just dropped it periodically. And if I saw I was going to get knocked into, like, after I get knocked up, I have a couple, like, a second in the air to look what I'm going to fly through, see if I'm going to be okay. And if I'm not going to be okay, I'd hit transfer and hope I was okay there. Usually it was fine.
I mean, in regards to the knockups, I know, obviously, since I'm awesome, I never got knocked up, so I don't know what that's like. But watching a demon hunter get knocked up and then kind of slowly float back to the ground, I found incredibly visually satisfying. You know, or watching them get knocked up and then use whatever cooldown they have that makes them zip back and forth. Like, watching them do that way up in the air, I found very funny.
What happens if you, like, get knocked up by a tornado and then you whirling dragon punch? Can you, like, reach the top of the zone?
Whenever you hit whirling dragon punch, you stop there and then go up a little bit. So, theoretically, if you were to hit it at the upper limit of the jump, it would take you a little bit higher. We'll get to my complaints about whirling dragon punch when we get to Behemoth. I've got a bone to pick with that fucking boss.
That boss is not fun.
The only other thing, there's one other thing I want to mention about Radiance, which really surprised me when I heard about it on Tuesday, which is the first I heard about it, because I totally missed it when I looked at PTR logs. The adds in the intermission have melees. They hit the tank with melee attacks, yeah. And that's nothing unusual, but they're magic and you can't block them. So, like, screw warriors, their shield block doesn't work, their armor doesn't work. Screw monks, kind of. You can still dodge them, but stagger almost doesn't work. And I guess it's a good time to be a blood DK because death strike works.
I think we ran into that problem once when I think somebody must have silenced them, right? You know, typically you just stun them, I think, reflexively, and that's kind of the way that it works, especially as a monk who has leg sweep. You just stun them and not have to worry about it. But I do believe at one point they got silenced through Arcane Torrent or something like that and turned on a ranged and just blew them up because we just did not expect, you know, them all switch to the same target and that they would actually melee. It was kind of funny.
I ran Black Ox Statue for that. So on my side, I would drop Black Ox Statue and we were interrupting aggressively. So I would drop it, I would taunt it, and they would get interrupted, and they'd all run to me. And then they started casting again, and they might melee me once or twice, but it wasn't a big deal. But I know on the other side they had some issues, because they didn't have enough AoE stuns to prevent all the chain lightnings, so they were using Solar Beam, whatever the Boomkin AoE silence is.
That's and Solar Beam, yeah.
Definitely had people get meleed to death.
On the topic of the statue, it seems super useful this tier compared to all the previous tiers, at least that I've played in.
I think it's going to be my default pick on that row for the entire tier. There's not any bosses where I'm like, I want to have ring for this. There are a lot of bosses, though, where I want to have statue.
Well, that, I mean, even just watching, like, watching Limit, you know, and stuff with Max and Darky and, or Lighty, you know, you really see how frequently they were micromanaging, you know, their Dave statue. And how useful it was, like on Zakuul, being able to just get all of the ads that spawned to come to one spot. I mean, Lighty was, he was micromanaging the heck out of his statue and making sure it was kind of always in the right spot. And I really liked that.
Yeah. Watching Lighty tank Zakuul was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that boss. But before we get there, let's talk about Behemoth, which for those that haven't been paying attention to this raid tier, is the underwater boss. Nashatar is an underwater zone, kind of. So they had to give us an underwater boss. And unlike Vajir, this boss sucks.
Yep. It's unpleasant.
There's just so many problems with it. WoW is not a 3D game.
Okay, so even setting aside that WoW is not a 3D game, like, Vashir worked. You could navigate it in multiple different ways, and for the most part, if you wanted, you could stick to the seafloor and treat it like a regular zone. But on Behemoth, right, they don't give you the water, like, the walk on the ground under the water buff that they even give you in parts of Nashatar. So, like, it's not like they've forgotten it exists. They just didn't use it, and it would make it so much nicer. So you're constantly swimming, and then there's this line soak mechanic on the fight that's extremely narrow and small, and also will kill them if not enough people soak. Like, really, really kill them dead if only two or three people soak, and the people that soak are also gonna die. And since it's so small, and you're trying to get into it in a 3D space, it's a dark line on a dark backdrop that you have to get into in a 3D space, and the graphic doesn't line up with it perfectly, and it's just like, I hope it targets all the rogues before it hits the shaman.
I mean,
yeah.
From what I was talking about with some other people, is it seemed like a solo mechanic at this point for Behemoth. Like, you just throw cooldowns on them, and you tell them to hit their cooldowns, and you pray they live. Like, I know for us monks, if we have diffuse magic, we can basically solo it, from what I've heard.
A mythic? On heroic, I'm sure you can. I don't know if you can on mythic. It hits really hard.
It's not even a heroic mechanic. Yeah, it's a mythic just mechanic. Mythic.
Oh, yeah. Is it?
They deign to add a mythic mechanic for this boss.
Maybe the person I was talking to was saying you life cocoon yourself, and you hit, you know, your two defensives as a Mistweaver, and you live. But I know they were talking about selling it as a monk.
It looks like on Mythic it deals 1.3 million.
That's nothing.
So, I mean, that's still 500,000-600,000 at least. With just a fuse, if you don't have something else, that's a lot of damage.
I don't think
you can solo soak it.
Maybe to you non-Mistweavers, where you don't have a health buff, a DR, and another DR, and then potentially a shield for, like, half your health.
I mean, like, a Windwalker could defuse and karma it and survive. I think. Maybe.
Yeah,
close.
It would be close.
On our kill, our paladin healer was like, okay, I'm gonna solo this. And then realized that he didn't have the cooldown he thought he did, and he got hit for 200k, absorbed 50k, and then got overkilled by 1 million.
I have a completely different opinion of the boss. I think it's okay. We soaked all of the ones that we couldn't solo just fine. It could definitely use a better indicator. Maybe if it changed color for you when you were in it or something. But I think it was really cool how it actually used the 3D space of the boss. Because obviously you can't just all stack. There's a chain lightning when people are too near each other. Yeah, I thought it was great that it used the 3D stuff. I didn't find the underwater combat too bad because the boss is completely stationary.
Right.
I want to say... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
My biggest issue with that mechanic is how hard it is to actually get in it. Unless the player that gets it is completely like on the plane of the sensor of the boss, the graphic doesn't line up exactly. So we had a couple pulls where like I was on my screen inside the graphic for the soak, and then just like I didn't take damage and they died.
Hmm. It could definitely be displayed, but a lot better. Oh, and just be more generous in area, to be honest. I have one or two issues with the boss that are maybe a little more spurious than your guys. My silly one is I don't really know what we're doing there to the boss. The raid is really weird in that it's quite a small raid. You kill the boss and then instead of going further in the raid, as if it's blocking your path, you just go backwards.
That's a good point.
And also, I don't like the swimming between platforms, but it's not difficult. It's really gimmicky. I guess it's supposed to add an enrage to the fight, but that's not really a thing.
See, that's actually a part I like, because I maybe it's just because of the visuals, but I love going from the point A to point B and seeing that the stage that we're going to is broken down a lot.
I just auto-run the thing.
He doesn't start gaining energy until
you interrupt him. Yeah.
You interrupt him, which you can use because he's not immune while he's casting. So you can like DPS him while he's casting Cavitation and just get 20 seconds of free damage on him.
If you do that, you can run in. You gotta be careful when you're killing the jellyfish.
Jellyfish? We had to. We killed them at specific. I had to interrupt on platform 2 at a specific time so that the pufferfish debuff would line up with what we needed it to.
I think maybe the. I don't know, the between platforms, but it's kind of weird.
I died to it once. Those jellyfish have pretty big hitboxes.
Yeah, I've never noticed that. It's kind of, I like that part of the fight. I think it's silly and doesn't really make a lot of sense. But as far as all the other problems I have with the fight, that's not one.
It is kind of fun. Quite a few. Like, as an idea.
See, it's like they're giving us, like, these jellyfish that are glowing are giving us a glowing debuff, and the leviathans are only attacking us and not the other glowing creatures, which is silly, but it's fun.
Symbiotic relationship, you know?
Also, fun fact.
Thousands of years in the making.
The tank debuff that is also a quote-unquote glowy debuff in that it gives you the ability to get healed. If you don't have the glowy debuff, you can't get healed generally. It's not the same as the DPS one. And you can swim over the open water with it and not get eaten.
What?
I found out that when I did this on accident, I swam off the first platform after the boss moved with 10 seconds left on my debuff because he meleed me once right before he went away and my Kotank had moved out of range. So he just hit me. And I didn't notice. So I had 10 seconds left. I'm out over open water and I realize what's happened. I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to die. And then I don't. It's actually totally fine, and I keep swimming, and nothing happens. And that's how I learned the Leviathans don't eat tanks. My co-tank still doesn't believe me, but I'll get through this one day.
Yeah, I think like my complaints are numerous for this boss. Like I, you know, now honestly, the fact that, like Cody said, that you'd kind of go down and then come back, and what was the purpose of the boss? That's going to be a thorn in my side now.
Then wait till you realize that it's not because we're killing a vicious enemy, because there are like four of them swimming around Azara's platform.
Yeah, well, and he's like stationary. It's not like he's going to come up to us. He's down there. We're up here.
For some reason, you can't click until he's dead.
We go into his house. and interrupt him doing whatever he's doing just so he can click a little orb.
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, yeah, I mean, the other things, and I didn't do it on Mythic. It was my turn to sit that boss out this week. So I haven't done it on Mythic, but, you know, the whole not being able to sit down and eat your food.
That's hilarious.
You know, it was just ridiculous. You know, for a while, if you got battle res, you wouldn't have the breathing debuff, so you had to go and get it, you know, which was kind of ridiculous. And the, you know, being being a Windwalker and using Whirling Dragon Punch moves you up in the vertical space. So you kind of have to naturally either air to be all the way down so that if you move up, you just go back all the way down, or air to be the highest vertically in your group so that if you go up, you're not colliding into somebody else and causing XX damage. And it's not like the other times Whirling Dragon Punch brings you up and then down. You just go up and stay up. And it just feels, it's bizarrely jarring, you know, having played a Windwalker for so long, to have Whirling Dragon Punch always makes the camera go up and then down. And now all of a sudden it just makes it go up and you don't ever go down. And it really kind of, the first time that happens to you, it's very unsettling a little bit. You know, the other thing where, like, if you kill the boss too early, like on Heroic, if you don't make it to the third platform, you know, or normal, you know, whatever, if you don't make it to the third platform, you have to swim up by yourself. And there's no swim speed bonus after you kill the boss. There's, you know, you make it to the third platform, you get to ride the seahorses, but they're not overly fast. It like, we come into the boss at point A, and then we just get even farther away from where we started, and then have to travel all the way back from where we started. It's just very odd. You know, it's a lot of just swimming, and I don't really know a lot of people in the game that enjoy swimming in the game.
Side bonus, your swim speed bonuses, like if you've gotten the blue card from Mechagon, right, don't work. They do not stack with the swim speed buff for the boss. So if you were hyped about getting that card and like, oh yeah, I'm going to be really freaking fast on this boss, it's going to be great, prepare to be disappointed, because it doesn't work. I thought
this boss was for Kaltirans.
Well, and that, like, even the seahorse, like, I tried to hop on, you know, swimming speed seahorse, and that didn't provide, like, I wasn't moving any faster if I could mount at all. I couldn't remember.
And then it feels like all move speed buffs are just kind of pointless.
Oh yeah, I can't use flying serpent kick as a Windwalker.
Yeah, that too.
Silent, you know, yeah. Tiger's Lust really doesn't do anything. The momentum debuff from Chi Torpedo really doesn't do anything. Like,
I don't think we should be complaining about this as monks.
It's, well, yeah, but
we really shouldn't. But
I think we should be. I think we've gotten used to this as part of our class's abilities, and all of a sudden it's been taken away from us. Yes, it brings us down to, you know, a normal level of mobility, but, you know, geez,
we get to feel like what it is
rough
to be a warlock for one boss.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't even say that, because everyone else then drops another tier below us. So, like, we're going down to normal and everyone goes down to DK. Yeah, because roll still takes you places. Like, a mage's blink, I have no clue where that's going to take you.
I don't think it works.
Exactly. Everyone drops a tier, but we're still
before
on
top. We move on, I've got the big tip for this boss, right? So what you want to do is when you get to the boss and you've died and you don't have a food buff because you skip all the trash in the raid like a smart group, go into your toy box, get the barnacle encrusted gem out.
Yeah, we
turns
discovered
you
that too.
Crab person, and you can eat. There you go.
30-minute cooldown, though, use it wisely.
Just don't wipe afterwards.
Boss. Otherwise, you have to release, then eat, and then swim to the boss. Crab people's good. You want to be a crab person. Who's next?
Which happens to be what the next boss is. Lady Ashvayne has somehow, some way or another, ended up in the Eternal Palace.
Yeah.
If you pay attention to the RP that goes on after you kill both Radiance and Behemoth, you get a choice in when you kill them. She gets, like, body horrored into a crab person. and not the Makrura kind of crab person that we're used to seeing. I mean, I guess you can go and look for a screenshot because it's not pretty, and I don't feel like
trying to describe it. Yeah, it's almost like a mix of, and I think that's what they were going for, it's almost like a mix of the generals, you know, like Vazex and Zakuul and stuff mixed with crab people. She's kind of a little half and half of old Gotti and crab people.
Which I
can say what you want about our looks, right? But it is remarkable how skilled she is at her newfound abilities after instantly being transformed.
Right away.
She throws the kitchen sink at you. Never been like that before. What a genius.
Truly ahead of her time.
The adaptive abilities of a chameleon.
So, Quoddy, you haven't done this. Have you done this? Any pulls on this boss yet?
Have you? We've done some pulls.
Okay, how about you, Bab?
Well, yeah, we did, I want to say, a dozen and a half or so, a dozen.
We got through Behemoth last night, and then just called raid. We had like 2 minutes left, so not enough time to go to Ashvane. So we're going to that tomorrow. So, on Heroic, she kind of does a lot of nothing. The only mechanic that really got anybody killed on Heroic was the bubble one, when somebody screwed up and dropped it on the group and suddenly there's 15 bubbles. How is it on Mythic?
It's, I mean, the bubbles, because you kind of have to manage them better, become almost a non-issue. They're just kind of a minor annoyance every little bit. You know, if your tanks are paying attention, they bring the boss onto the bubbles anyway. As people get better, you know, we had a couple pulls where a couple of us did a really excellent job of stacking up in a really nice, tight stack for it. Whereas, you know, kind of other people, as they maybe saw that mechanic for the first time, weren't as great as stacking up. But if you get people stacked up, you get the boss on top of it, they die like instantly. It's really not that big of a deal. Biggest change. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Quoddy.
We prefer to stack the coral growth. So what we do is everybody with a bubble goes in front of the boss, and everybody else just goes right outside the range. You don't even need to move the boss. They're stacked. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, the most jarring thing for me going into from Heroic into Mythic is that really in Heroic, you don't have to worry about the corals and knocking them out. Like, yeah, it's nice if you use the little arrow things, but really it's not a big problem unless your DPS is slow enough that you're going to run out of room. You know, we kind of, the debuff, you know, soaking the bubbles is really manageable, you know, as long as the healers are attentive. So going to Mythic and all of a sudden getting rid of the big corals becoming such an integral part of the boss, I liked it. I felt like it really shows off, you know, Monk's movement. You know, as a Windwalker, I can get all the way across the room, you know, in time to soak, you know, in time to blow up a coral if I get targeted, or after it, you know, drops the circles and stuff for you to soak. You know, I think it really gives a lot of opportunity for Windwalkers and for Monks kind of in general to do some of that stuff because we have so much movement. But just the enormous difference in difficulty in how hard everything hits and how much health she has is pretty significant. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think anyone will be surprised if there's, you know, maybe a 10% nerf to her health going into next week.
That's
so
kind of
the mythic mechanic on the boss is, I guess, that the bubbles give you a debuff that lasts for 20 minutes and it's a dot and you just cannot get rid of it. Even death does not stop this dot.
Actually,
and it does a lot of damage.
That's actually a heroic mechanic. The mythic mechanic is you get the big bubble.
Yeah.
And
that takes
and
three
dots longer. Yeah. It's just the dots longer and you get the big bubble.
Three tanks for this and having one tank go around and pop bubbles, which is a lovely thought, but not so nice when you're doing it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there was a lot of big discussion with a lot of the guilds on Zakuul right now doing a one tank strat and kind of seeing one tank for Zakul, but three tanks for, you know, for Ashvayne. I personally don't mind it. I've kind of always somebody that can kind of fill in for those goofy tank roles if possible, you know, and I mean, going way back in Siege of Orgrimmar, I was the one who kited the adds in the last phase. I kited the big wheel in the last phase, and, you know, stuff like that. So I like where it gives somebody who has some ability as a tank a chance to do stuff without really requiring them to be a full-blown tank, where it's more of an in-between type situation. So I kind of like the flexibility. You know, we see a lot of, oh, we need X, you know, for this boss, we need 5 melee, or this boss, we need 0 melee, or this boss, we want 3 healers or 5 healers or 6 healers. There's not a lot of variance with the tanks. So I kind of feel like it's nice to see a little bit of variance in how people can handle, you know, their tanking situation.
I'm a little bit concerned, just because of, and I haven't done enough prep on this fight yet. That's something I'm planning to do tomorrow before we head in. About how important stacking the corals, the barnacle bash corals, not the big corals, is going to be. Because, like, for a brewmaster, it's super easy. You roll into the old one, you drop it, you get back out with transcendence or roll. At least from my, I understand, or you use Tiger's Lust. One of those, like, many options. Honestly, there's probably several more options that I just haven't thought of yet, because, you know, monks and mobility go hand in hand. But my co-tank is a blood DK, and mobility options for blood DKs are a little bit more limited. And
yeah, I mean, I know it, you know, on that point, it depends on how much. I mean, we didn't get to the point where, you know, like we would wipe right around breaking the second shield. So we weren't getting to a point where we were running out of room. We definitely need to prioritize it better. But we also were, you know, during those attempts, running with 2 monks, you know, so it's definitely something that I know Zell and Pao were finding it a pain, because his casts seemed very variable. I know Pao kind of compared it a little bit.
Spell queuing.
Yeah, he compared it to Jaina a little bit, where, you know, she was supposed to cast something, but hey, she's going to cast something else, or she's just not going to cast anything for a second or two. So I know the two of them would kind of, they'd roll in to the spiky coral, and then Ashvayne wouldn't cast anything. So they'd just be sitting there taking damage, but not really able to move. So I think, you know, maybe hopefully we'll see some improvement in the variability of that. But I think that was a bigger hassle than the actual action of getting in there.
Okay. Yeah, and the guy we have that is currently planning to be our third tank is also a Death Knight. So our tank comp's looking like a Brewmaster and 2 Death Knights. So if we do need to have, like, if Blood DK mobility just doesn't cut it for stacking corals, which hopefully isn't an issue, we may have to mess with the comp a bit.
It's fine. You just walk in and walk out.
You just walk in and walk out? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and even, like, any stacking you can do is beneficial. You know, so even if he just walks in and gets as far as he can before it goes off, then that's kind of what, you know, what you got to do. Yeah. And a lot of times the timing, you know, like sometimes you might go in and get it and then your other tank is going to taunt, you know, anyway. So the boss doesn't really have to go far in, or you have time to run out without getting smacked by the boss. So sometimes the timings line up to make it easier. Obviously, sometimes the timings line up to make it
harder. Okay.
And I haven't done too much, you know, research into it, but the coral on the ground doesn't hurt a crazy, crazy amount.
No.
Like, it's kind of a nuisance. It's like, please don't do this, because there's already so much damage going out to the whole raid. But to do that, to stack it all up so you have so much free room, it's totally worth it, and not a hassle for healers typically.
Well, I know, yeah, and I found that out, you know, trying to use it for Touch of Karma. Like, it. If no other damage is going out, it doesn't do enough damage in the 8 seconds to break my karma. So, I mean, well, does a very minor amount of damage, even if you do have to just run in.
I am way less concerned about it now.
Yeah. No, that the actual mechanic of being in there and the damage you take from that is super. I was shocked at how minor.
Okay. Well, I guess let's take a step to the next boss, which is also, from what I've seen, by and large, a three-tank fight. Orgazoa. Which people seem to have been mostly three-tanking. I think there are some two-tank logs, and the only two-tank logs have double brewmaster because you use the ox statue.
Right.
Or an AoE.
Wasn't the world first and second kill a two-tank with just double brew being gods with their statue?
You know what? Let me look. While...
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Limit did it that way. Yes. So, I mean, yeah. I think... if you don't have access to double brew, then you're going to probably want to run a third tank. But I know Limit, I think they were running a third tank for a while and then essentially switched out a tank for a DPS and then ended up switching that DPS out for a fifth healer and then killed it like three pulls later. So I think it was just kind of finding that balance with the damage and healing requirement.
So
it also helped they nerfed the add spawn rate.
My understanding
is you would get to a point at 9 adds up on the top platform.
The first pull, watching them pull this boss, there was just so many adds. It was
I saw that. It was disgusting. So I'm looking at the kills on Orgazoa right now on WoWProg, which, like, Grain of Salt, I don't know how they're doing comps on some of these. On WoWProg. Sometimes there are errors, but it looks like Limit 2 tanked it, Method 3 tanked it, Pieces 2 tanked it, and Aversion 2 tanked it. So it looks like...
Aversion also used like 6 elemental shamans, so they can't be used in any consideration.
On Raider.io, actually, it shows Aversion 4 tanking it with a bear and a prop pally.
Yeah, I saw the prop pally, and that's why I'm not entirely sure about the accuracy of it, because it looked like they two tanked it on WoWProg with Brewmaster and a prop pally, and then that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, this one, I think this was a recording issue.
Can you explain why you need two brewmasters? Because
so the rate at which the adds spawn, so like on heroic, you can time it so that you do the tank swap on the boss at the same time as the adds die. So there's no taunt swap on the adds necessary. You just have the one that has the tank debuff go and soak the adds. On mythic, you get way more add spawns, so you actually have to be able to taunt the adds, which means you have to be able to taunt multiple things, but most tanks don't have an AoE taunt. The only one that does is Brewmaster, by placing your Black Ox statue and taunting it.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I mean, when watching Max and Lighty do that, it was like poetry and watching them manage their Ox statues. It's really been remarkable.
It's also fun, big air quotes on the fun here. Fun interaction with Black Ox statue. The way that most people have their macros set up, and this might be the only way to set up your macro to taunt your statue, it just does a slash target Black Ox statue. But if you target your co-tank's statue, it doesn't do the AoE taunt. So you have to like set the statue as your focus and then taunt your focus in order for it to work, and it's super messed up. I don't understand why Blizzard made that fight work the way it does instead of using something like the fixates that there are on Unat. But the other fun thing about this boss, I'm super, super, super looking forward to this boss because of how he actually just deletes tanks. Like, not even a little bit of mercy. That first hit, most tanks need cooldowns for, and just like, I'm gonna hit Iron Skin Brew, I'm gonna put on Hot Trub, I'm gonna get hit, and I'm going to do a lot of damage.
See, that's the opposite coming from a healer. Like, at least maybe a Mistweaver, because I'm like, oh, tanks need cooldowns for the first hit. And then I'm like, oh, Life Cocoon doesn't really do that much for this hit. It's still going to get deleted through the hit with Life Cocoon.
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. This is the fight where I'm actually concerned that we might have to have my co-tank either play a Brewmaster alt or have one of our other monks swap to Brew for the fight, just because of how hard Orgozoa hits. I don't think any tank has enough cooldowns to main tank it the whole time. And I might be wrong. It sounds like there is some variety in the kill comps, but I'm not sure how much I can trust these.
As to the boss itself on Heroic, I think it's... The tank thing is kind of cool, how you it starts off hitting really hard, and you have to get stacked and take less damage. But the boss, what have they done? The first phase is kind of lame, and then the second phase doesn't happen.
They did.
They buffed him, so he actually goes downstairs now.
Yeah, but it's 40%.
Still has too low health, they add spawn, and don't do anything. What's the point of that? And I understand we have more DPS than most players, but I don't think this is an uncommon thing.
One of the adds, the giant brute, like his soak mechanic, where it's you're supposed to, you know, put a lot of people in it, you can just avoid that because a tank with 90% DR can go in there and be fine.
Or a brewmaster with no DR can go in there and hit Iron Skin Brew and also be fine, because stagger is fair and balanced.
I don't know if you can do that one on Mythic, but
I know you can. Still, on Heroic.
You could go in there and Zen Med it if you have to.
So I'm looking at public logs for Orgozoa, and there is one kill that I see. There are three publicly logged Orgozoa kills at this point. Two of them have double Brewmaster and no other tanks. One of them has a Blood DK, a Brewmaster, and a Protection Paladin. So apparently, it is totally possible to... I am assuming this Blood DK is main tanking. Actually, I should check that. Damage taken. Yeah, the Blood DK is main tanking it. So... hopefully we won't have to do any nonsense with who's tanking on Orgozoa. But this boss kind of highlights to me the balance issues that they are having. That, like, I'm looking at this and going, this seems like fun. I'm going to get deleted, and then I'm going to press purify, and everything's going to be great. And everybody else is like, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die.
Well, I mean, that's fun too. You're a tank. That's what I'm here for.
If you have any red paladins, they're probably gonna love you. But I mean, outside of that,
no, because you do live. Otherwise, you don't kill the boss. I mean,
so I want you to get a handle on this right here. 48 seconds into this fight, Blood DK gets hit for 500k with cooldowns going. He's got Vamp Blood, he's got Azeroth's Undying Gift, which is like a 40% DR, and he's using a Trident, and he's using the Diamond Trinket, and he's got Gemhide, and he's got the other basically Gemhide trait. So, like, he's mono defensive items and gets hit for 500k.
What does it put him at, HP-wise?
Let me go and look.
Because I can't imagine he has much over, like, much health remaining.
Because it's during Vamp Blood, it puts him to about 50%. Because he's got a bunch of absorbs, so like the 500k includes absorbed damage. He goes to 450 out of 700k. But he's like stacking cooldowns to do that. And it's just like, it's nuts. It's it. I'm excited about it. I don't think my co-tank is as excited as I am, but he doesn't get hot shrub, so he doesn't get to be that excited. I may not get to run hot shrub because I might have to run a defensive trait essence instead, but you know, one can hope.
I don't know. This boss looks like a lot of fun on Mythic. It's just, how do you manage the adds and tanks not getting one shot?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the ad management from a fun department, because a lot of these fights where you have to corral a bunch of adds can be really frustrating when you're supposed to swap and one of them happened to follow your co-tank and now it's out of your AoE taunt range. This can be frustrating. But enough about Orgazoa. Let's move on to a boss that maybe has a little bit less of tank-specific mechanics and more just, like, general things going on. Queen's Court.
Fun boss.
I really enjoy it, actually. Yeah.
I actually really like it, too.
Also, I don't know if this has been stated, but so far, from, like, you know, going from the first boss to where we are now, it actually has a decent difficulty ramp, it seems, and it's not going to be like last tier, where, you know, a few of the jokes are a pushover, and then the rest of them, like the last two, last three, are basically the whole instance.
Yeah. The first three are a pushover. Ashvane's quite hard. Queen's Court is easy, apparently.
I don't think I'd say, at least from watching them, and I don't think I'd say it's easy, but it's a lot. The difficulty in court comes from, like, managing the push timings. Like, you really kind of want to push it very specific timings to skip or to get less of certain mechanics is kind of the biggest part.
I'm going to be honest, I have no idea what changes on this boss going from heroic to mythic.
Yeah, we haven't really gotten that far either. I mean, I like it in heroic. I think it's a fun fight. I think it's got, you know, a lot of fights that, you know, I want to say kind of tease the mechanics of a later boss. You know, like they have the decrees and stuff in Queen's Court, and then they also, you know, obviously exist in Azshara. You know, I like it in Queen's Court because it's not, it doesn't feel like I'm being smashed over the head with it. Like, it feels very, it makes sense that this is the Queen's Court. So, of course, they're going to be following, you know, kind of her rules and stuff like that. So I think it kind of feels less, you know, jammed in there.
Yeah, I like 90% agree with you. And I haven't looked at Limits Prague on Queen Azshara yet. Spoilers: they killed Zakul today. They are just starting on Queen Azshara as of this evening. But at least on heroic, the decrees on Azshara almost don't matter. With like if your entire raid ignores them, it's a huge problem. But it's really easy for one person to get like 9 or 10 stacks of the sanction debuff on Azshara, and live.
We had a guy at 32. He lived to.
I mean, Pal hit 99. At one point, because it was just a bug, and he went from 0 to 99 and died with 99 stacks.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was hilarious. He just pop exploded at the end of him, and we had to like go to logs to figure out exactly what happens. And turned out he took 99 ticks of the debuff in like a hundredth of a second. Yeah, it was awesome. You can probably, I mean, the logs are somewhere in our Discord. You can find them.
I'm going to probably hilarious. Just go poke Nini about that, because I'm sure he's got a link around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds like we don't really have a lot about this boss to say beyond just, like, it's fun on the heroic. It's basically, like, I guess there is something in that the decrees on this boss are much more important than the decrees on the Jara, and they are a central mechanic of this boss, so that makes sense. Like, they will wipe you if you do not do the decrees. But, yeah, it's a fun boss.
It really is a fun boss. Like, as a healer, there's not as much downtime as you would expect. Like, you look at it and you're like, oh, there's just these three big bursts from orbs. But when that decree to keep moving goes, like, ooh, you get a blast. It's so much fun.
I will say, I have one minor gripe with it, and that's the decree that says don't take damage. And then there's no exemption for tanks. Like, it's got a 5-second duration.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so...
See, I like that.
Oh, hang on. So, I was freaking out because on PTR there was a bug where sometimes the internal cooldown wouldn't work, and so the tank would just be healing immune for 15 seconds while actively tanking, which is obviously insane. That's been fixed. There's a 5-second internal cooldown, so there's always a 5-second gap between the healing debuff for you to get healed back up. But there's still, like, it's not a mechanic for the tank. The tank just, like, has 15 seconds... or 20 seconds or whatever it is, where they are just, like, periodically unhealable in 5-second bursts. And it's just really annoying. Brewmaster doesn't have cooldowns to deal with it, and also continues to have stagger tick during that time. It's giving me Verimathra's vibes, but because the duration is so short and there's no big damage prior to it in almost every case, like, it's not going to be as problematic as Verimathra's was, but it's still kind of annoying.
See, you just need to get yourself a good Mistweaver, so when it comes on at a scary moment, you can get a life cocoon, and you get a bonus ton of.
That's what I did on Zekvaz. Is I set up something with one of my Mistweavers where every time I would take one of the combos, I would just call out life cocoon me, and they always saved it for me, and it worked great.
It's an amazing spell at, you know, heal absorb times, but those aren't the most common thing.
That's okay. You can't complain too much. You get to snipe all the tranquilities.
Oh, we get a snipe tranquility. We also got Way of the Crane now. Everything's good. Just, you know, nerf Glimmer a little bit in Disc 2, and we're even better.
So let's talk about Zekul, and we're getting a little bit long on this podcast, so we're going to probably not talk about Azshara a whole lot, especially since we have very little information about Mythic. But Zekul has one really notable thing, at least from my perspective, in that the one and only kill of it so far was with a single tank. Because the tank mechanic on this boss is that you get tethered to... if you have another tank and they're in range, it tethers you to them. And they take 50% of the damage that you take, and it's taken as magic damage, so they can't mitigate it. Except that if you use a Brewmaster as your main tank, the damage they take is so smooth that it's basically just like a dot, a reasonably hard-hitting dot. And so you just get tethered to a Demon Hunter that plays a build that has a bunch of Leech, and you just don't need another tank.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, watching Lighty do it, it was really interesting to watch him, because you maintain such a high level of stagger that, you know, I mean, he was maintaining, like, 260, 280% stagger, you know, for really prolonged periods of time, but because everything was so smooth and having two Holy Pallies and two Disc Priests and stuff, it really wasn't enormously threatening, you know, to him. It was really very interesting to kind of watch how he handled such a huge amount of stagger.
The tether target only takes 50% of the damage for some reason. I'm not sure why they did that.
Well, and doesn't the... I mean, I could be wrong, but it looked like the tether target is the damage only based on the damage that the tank actually take? Like, so when you stagger 50% of it, they're actually then going to take only 25% of what the actual hit was?
No, that is correct.
They take the stagger ticks.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but they take the stagger ticks, but they don't take the full chunk.
It also coincidentally makes Blood DKs the worst at being a main tank on this boss by, like, a very, very large margin, because the whole
Blood DK thing... Because their heals don't heal up the tether.
Yeah, is they take it all and then heal it back, except their heal doesn't transfer, so they just take it all and the other tank is just getting destroyed by magic damage. But to be honest, I expect by the time we actually reach this boss, the damage check is not going to exist to the point that there's a real strong reason to one tank it instead of just having one person tank it basically the majority of the time and the other tank just kind of play whatever DPS build they feel like playing on the boss and making it super safe. Because if you one tank it and the tank ever dies, it's just a wipe.
Well, and I think it's kind of, you know, like I talked about with Ashvane, it's a really interesting, you know, is one tanking a boss really a problem? Is it something that Blizzard should look to fix? You know, stuff like that. I'm sure that there's some type of philosophical discussion going on, because it really has been a while since we've seen a boss that kind of truly could be one tanked. You know, Zul, you could one tank ish, but not, you know, exactly the same. You know, so I mean, I'm sure they're having some type of discussion about whether or not it's something that that needs fixing, or whether they're fine to just kind of let it ride.
Typically, one tanking fights is like considered the cheese thing that you do on farm, or it like breaks the fight. Something like on Rastakhan, where you could use Blackhawk Statue to tank Zul, and then you just there's no tank swap other than that, so you just don't need two tanks. And they fixed that because that wasn't the intended way to do the fight, and it was super super cheesy. Except that they can't just fix this because the only way to fix it is to completely break stagger.
No. The tether only transfers 50% of the damage. You just take so little damage when you're tethered.
It's if they made it so it transferred 100%, you just could not do it with a Blood DK as the main tank. Like it doesn't mean that you can no longer one tank it. It means that you could no longer use a Blood DK or a Vengeance Demon Hunter, period.
Because I'm not convinced co-tank. That's true, but...
My co-tank has 700k HP in Vamp Blood. I have 350-370k, maybe 400k with Power Word Fortitude and some stam buffs and wearing my max eye level. Like, one hit for them as magic damage is going to one-shot me. If I took the full thing as magic damage. Maybe not one shot me, but it's like two or three hits and I'm just dead.
No, and it reflects it as magic damage. So even if it's a physical hit, it's going to hit you as magic damage.
Yeah, but then you could just be the actual tank instead of the main tether target. I'm not seeing the problem.
I mean, I think if they actually want to fix it, what they're probably going to do is just make it so it doesn't tether to DPS. And it will only... Because they've already got something built into it. If there's nobody in range of the tether, it just stuns the tank for 10 seconds. Which basically means it kills them. So what I expect them to do is to make it so that if there's no tank specialization in range, it just stuns the tank for 10 seconds. Which is like a super hacky fix, but also doesn't have any bad implications for the fight balance.
I guess the boss does other things. He, like, you put in a statue and all the ads walk to it. There's a lot of mechanics that I don't really pay attention to at all as a tank. I think it's a really DPS focused fight in Eulerik, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's... Go ahead.
Tanks are just kind of in charge of moving the boss from, you know, damage increasing debuff to damage increasing.
I mean, as a healer, it's really just do your typical job of keeping everyone alive and then have one, you know, dispel. Just have, like, you know, I dispel first, you dispel second. And if anything, it feels less like a healer fight than others, even though it's like real bursty, it's not as much damage as, you know, Lady Ashvane or something like that, it seems.
Oh, actually, hang on, Cody. The real reason I think they won't do just doubling the Mind Tether transfer, the transfer goes both ways. So when a raid AoE goes out, that hits both tanks, obviously. If it does 100% transfer, the tanks just take double. Which may or may not be a problem, but based on what it was on Heroic, it seems like that would be a problem on Mythic.
Also, Revival dispels the thing, but the way Revival works is it heals and then dispels, so that basically becomes a useless ability on this fight, which is, you know, great. Our one cooldown just can't really be used.
That's awful.
Like, they'll probably come in, you know, in 2-3 weeks when Mistweavers finally actually start getting to it on Mythic and add it to this blacklist they have of abilities that Revival can't dispel, like the debuff on Cabal. Mistweavers used to be able to dispel it, but not anymore. But it's going to be a minute before they get to it, probably, which really sucks for, you know, Mistweaver viability on that fight for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
I do like, one of the things I really like about this fight is the tank mechanic. Kind of, I call it a tank mechanic, but in phase 4 where there's the void zone that spawns that you have to drag the tank into so he gets his damage amp, and if you don't drag him into it, it does a bunch of raid-wide AoE. Well, you can't see it as the tank with the phase that you're in for that part of the fight, so it has to be called out by a DPS, and they have to kind of get you to the right location, whether they just set a raid marker out or guide you to an existing raid marker, whatever. I like that mechanic. I think that's a lot
really cool, yeah. Although I really do recommend, this might be a fight you want to give assist to a couple more people on, because getting guided to it by left a bit, right a bit, warmer is not easy.
See, it's feel like it's going to be a drop a raid marker in the exact middle of it, and then the tank can basically feel it out because they're like, okay, if its hitbox is hitting the raid marker, we're good.
Yeah, that's what we did on Heroic. The issue with just giving a couple people assist is that if they die or are not in the right phase at that time, and maybe you can plan around this better than we were doing on Heroic, then they can't see it either. So, like, maybe you have to give everybody assist, or maybe you just
no, that always messes up boss mods. There are always people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, we only had one person with assist, and he was dead, so we had to do the old...
That's what happened to us. It's like the one person we had assist on did it the first couple times, and then the third time they were dead and nobody else could mark it. So I just had somebody like guide me to the right location near an existing raid marker. So what do we think? I know we're skipping Azshara. I don't have a lot of strong opinions about Azshara. I guess before we move on,
this is too many mechanics.
You got a lot going on, but I don't think it's got a lot going on. But once you get it, I don't think it's that bad. It's just getting to the point that you get it is hard.
Yeah, that's like the only thing it seems is like there's a ton of information, and once you understand it and can parse it, you know, live, the fight just becomes a decent cakewalk.
The strategy, I think the meta strategy that's emerging has degenerated into you kill one of the adds and then you just leave the other one alive for the rest of the fight and you just kill the boss, which is pretty weird. Our first kill, we were like properly powering stuff and killed both of the adds.
Is that really the strat?
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier, to be honest.
So what we did last week, or this week, is kind of degenerate in that we tanked her in the same spot all the way until the last phase, and Just like continuously powered up a single ward.
Yeah, I think everybody does that.
And yeah. I mean, you basically ignore the entire ward mechanic until phase four. But we did kill both of the adds, so that we went into phase four and had nothing. But
Well, when you don't kill the adds, you push her by percentage, and you just have quite a short phase four. So having the extra add up who rarely casts the drain ward doesn't really matter that much.
So, that's interesting.
To be honest, I think we only kill one ad because it's there. You might as well.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of... We were pushing, once we got all of our shit sorted out, we were pushing with, like, 43% on the boss, so we were almost at the percentage push. And this is on Heroic, obviously, but... That's interesting. I wonder if that's something we'll see on Mythic. Where you just, like, keep a Myrmidon alive and continuously keep the shield off of the remaining person... Not a good thing, and
I'm not sure you do that.
Well, like I'm assuming on Mythic, it's gonna live long enough that you actually do have to care about the drain ward. Like on Heroic, we can just burn it, but on Mythic, probably not. So I don't know.
See,
I don't think.
I feel like it's gonna be you drag the boss around to the you know the adds instead of just you know keeping it near one ward and keeping that ward powered.
I guess I was wrong in saying we keep it stationary until phase 4, because we do drag it to the ad we're killing for cleave each time. But, I mean, it's for cleave, not for managing wards, so it's not, it's still not dealing with ward mechanics. I'm a little bit disappointed that the ward mechanic... They've got this cool little UI elements and all this new stuff going on with it that happens to also not work in logs, which is annoying. But then the strategy is just have people walk in and take a debuff and then walk out and you never move the boss. It feels a little bit disappointing, and I guess we'll see if that's the way it's done on Mythic.
And if you have one person calling to, you know, who to go soak where, and you have raid markers on them, then only one person needs that raid element or that UI for it, which really sucks.
The fight is a cool concept. There's a weird thing where... It has a phase one. I'm not entirely sure what phase one is about. Maybe they needed to pad out the fight.
Yeah, I felt that way too. Phase one didn't really make a lot, or doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, because they just kind of are there and then disappear. Like, I almost would have assumed it would have been a second fight.
It feels like they were like, wow, we have a lot of mechanics. And these adds with their spear throws are kind of important. Let's give them a tutorial phase.
Oh, I guess that makes a lot of sense.
And then like the ice blast never shows up again.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's like on Zakuul, if that's how you pronounce his name. Their first three phases are, you know, here's a set of mechanics, here's a set of mechanics, here's a set of mechanics. And then phase four hits and you're like, here's all the mechanics at the same time. We're going to give you a tutorial for, you know, 3/4 of the phases, and then you're going to actually get the fight for the last little half.
And there's at least a little bit going on in the first phase for tanking, because when the adds, the longer the adds tank to die, the more of the purple stuff they put on the ground. And so I was seeing on Max's stream that they were starting to try just stacking up the purple stuff so that they would have more space later in the fight. So there is... It's not like the first phase is entirely isolated.
We did have one pull where we had, like, bad placement. But it's not too hard to stack. It does increase damage. The pull stack.
I did find that out the hard way. I tried stacking it and then went in one time and I got ticked by four of them at once and almost died.
But I stack most of the melee adds once. And then we just drag the adds at the outside of the room and we never go anywhere near there ever again.
So what do we think about this tier overall? Like, I know we're not even halfway through the tier in terms of bosses and definitely not halfway through the tier in terms of time, but we've done it on Heroic. I think everybody here has got AOTC at this point. What do we think?
I'm loving it. all these bosses are new and exciting, and I can see them. I can see a few of them getting old quick, like Lady Ashvain, but a lot of them I feel like I'm going to have a good time going from each, you know, up to Mythic on them, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of have, I'm not really sure how I feel about it. You know, and people ask me when I was streaming and stuff how I felt about the bosses so far. When I stepped into Battle for Dazar'alor, I really liked that raid. Kind of from top to bottom, I was like, oh, this is a fantastically designed raid. And then as time went on, my opinion of it lowered and lowered and lowered. Whereas I kind of feel like I don't have that same thrill initially. But my opinion of the raid improved from last week to this week. So, you know, I think for a while it's going to continue to improve. I think I'll end up in the end liking it better than I ended liking Dazar'alor.
I think that's something. I was in that same boat where Dazar'alor launched and I was like, this raid's great. This raid's a lot of fun. And then like 3 months into it, I'm like, this raid is miserable. I never want to see any of these bosses again. I would rather be back on Cahoon, of all things. And so I was a little bit, when we went in on Heroic Week, just like not willing to be like, yeah, this raid's actually good. And the highest I was willing to be is like, this raid might not suck. But I definitely, doing Heroic on this week, enjoyed it more than last week. And I think I'm hopeful that that's the way it's going to end up.
See, I feel like just last tier, there were so many bosses with super annoying mechanics compared to this tier so far, that it's just like, the more you do them, you're like, oh, we forgot to soak one thing, or we pushed at the wrong time on Jaina. Oh, she did an ice fall down the middle, so it's essentially a wipe.
We won't talk about Jaina.
Oh, don't worry, I'm with you there. 415 pulls was not fun.
Side bonus, there are no caster bosses in this tier. Not a single one.
Sure, that was on purpose.
We had Jaina. We had Jade Fire Masters. Or at least half of Jade Fire Masters. We had, I feel like there was one other boss that was technically a caster and had some issues with that. But it was a consistent issue last tier. And I'm glad that we don't have to deal with it again, because it was miserable. And the bosses didn't work.
Don't worry. You're going to get Lady Ashvain, and for some reason, for you, it's just going to be like, here's a random
spell. She's
going to
like start spamming ice shards.
Yeah, and you're like, she's going to be sitting in the barnacle, the mailer, going to be like, hey, can you like do the thing called moving her? And then they look, and you're like across the boat, and she's still sitting there.
Yep.
No, she thankfully has been super responsive to movement. Like watching Pow, you know, like kite it as we try to avoid her getting bubbles right before we finish off her shield. Like she seems very responsive to travel, to the point where it's probably going to infuriate your melee that she's going to move so well.
That's good to hear.
I'm really appreciative that they decided to add mythic mechanics to some of the bosses this tier. It's a direction they kind of strayed away from in Battle for Dazar'alor, where they were heroic but with some more health.
That's a good point, actually.
If you go back to our Dazar'alor podcast, I talk about this a lot. With a conspiracy theory too. We'll not get into that here, but it was silly.
Hang on though. I forgot what your conspiracy theory was. Can you give me the short version?
Okay. So a lot of the bosses just didn't have many changes at all. Rastakhan especially on Mythic didn't do anything different. One irrelevant mechanic that no one ever encountered. Originally the raid was supposed to have a different end for Horde and Alliance. Alliance would end at Rastakhan.
Mm-hmm.
And Horde would end at Jaina. You would just do the bosses in a different order. They scrapped that. And it feels like maybe they removed all the mythic mechanics from Rastakhan, Conclave, High Tinker, and Opulence for some reason, because they wanted to have a difficulty curve.
And then missed the mark, and there was no curve. There was just a wall.
No, but that's how I subscribe to that conspiracy theory, because I felt that the curve up to Rostican and the curve from Mechatork to Jaina was smoother and meant to be more interchangeable. Whereas when they decided to go with the linear setup, they nerfed Rostican without really changing a lot of his stuff, which is why he feels incomplete. And they buffed the hell out of Jaina, which is why she feels overly punishing.
But then, I mean, other than that, they didn't really add anything to High Tinker. Maybe that's because he was supposed to be the fourth boss for some people.
Yeah,
a lot
I think
was added on Stormwall.
Oh, well, okay. Stormwall was a broken fight. A lot was quote-unquote added on Stormwall.
It was quite different on Mythic, though. It was good.
But you just ignored most of the mechanics on the boat because you didn't interrupt the shields. And,
That's life.
And, like, on the platform on the docks, there were new mechanics. Like, you had the sirens that didn't happen on Heroic and stuff like that. So Stormwall did have differences still, but Stormwall on Mythic was a broken fight. In the same way,
after
Jaina,
the rest of the bosses, you take what you get.
See, I'm wondering if they just kind of, like, when they did the whole swap-a-roo, they were just like, oh, this is actually going to be the eighth boss. It probably needs some more mechanics because it's just Heroic right now without too much more damage. Let's just take a boat mechanic that, you know, can one-shot someone and slap it in there.
I know, there's obviously no... It's probably not... It's just a random silly conspiracy theory. Probably no truth to it. I didn't really subscribe to it.
So I will say I am excited to see that there is not a boss so far that looks like it's broken in the way that Stormwall was broken and that Jaina was broken. In Eternal Palace, there's not anything that looks like that. The closest thing would be one tanking Zekul, and that's just to hit the numbers check that we're going to have more gear than them in 4 weeks or whenever we get there. But I think that kind of wraps it up for us, unless anybody's got some last minute thing they want to interject. But thank you all for listening. This has been the PeakCraft podcast, and we will be back in a couple of weeks to talk about how Azerite essences have panned out, not just in Eternal Palace, but in general, what we think about how the system has worked out. So until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
See you guys.